This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania. Everybody, this is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania, episode 36. My name, of course, is Pat Loika, and today I am joined by my good friend Antonio Cuneo.
What's up?
And we're going to talk about some comics, and we're going to talk about the Thor movie that just came out this past weekend. And before we proceed, I just wanted to warn you: this is a spoiler-heavy episode. Since we're going to talk about Thor, the plot and all that stuff, and the characters, and pretty much everything about the movie, we're basically going to be spoiling it. So if you haven't seen that movie yet...
You have been forewarned.
Exactly. You have been forewarned. And since we're already doing a lot of spoilers in that aspect of the show, the comics that we're going to talk about will be... we'll be spoiling those too. So
this is just the spoiler shit fest.
Yeah, this is the big spoiler episode of Loika Mania, which happens once every generation. actually, we'll be talking about Moon Knight number 1 by Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev, Uncanny X-Force number 9 by Rick Remender and Billy Tan, and Fear Itself number 2 by Matt Fraction and Stuart Immonen. And if you haven't read any of those books, then I suggest you don't listen to that part of the show. And if you haven't seen Thor yet and you haven't read those books, then you really shouldn't be listening to this yet. You're going to have to wait a bit before you can listen. So,
don't say we didn't warn you.
Yes, you've been warned, so we'll get started. First up is Uncanny X-Force number 9. This is by Rick Remender, Billy Tan, and colored a man, this Dean White, the colorist, probably does the heaviest work in this book. And
just coloring the hell out of this book.
Yeah, the previous issue is probably one of the nicest things that Billy Tan has ever done. Then I realized how much of the work actually belonged to Dean White.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, don't get me wrong, Billy Tan, I like his work. When he's good, he's really good, and sometimes he needs help. And unfortunately, this is one of those issues. But as far as the plot goes, though, I really love the story. The basic premise is that Magneto discovers the existence of X-Force, and he asks them for a favor. And that's really all there is to it. And it is an interesting story because it's basically just a Magneto and Wolverine story. And whether or not this will play out later on, I don't know. But basically, Magneto asks Wolverine to kill, I guess it looks like a Nazi commander that probably gave him hell when he was a kid, of course. And, you know, Magneto's a Holocaust survivor. So he sicks X-Force towards this guy. Of course, it's only Wolverine that goes and does it. So the thing that I liked about this a lot, I love the writing. I like that Magneto actually does this because it kind of shows that he's still pretty, you know, he's very,
very
human.
Human, yeah.
He's still afraid. As far as his childhood goes, this guy is like one of the boogeymen, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I thought it was really well handled.
Yeah, but I also think it shows a side of not his evilness, and not, I mean, because this is something horrible that happened, mm-hmm. and I guess it shows Magneto is not just willing to go and kill people willy-nilly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he still has that negative, I mean, which is completely well-deserved, and, you know, the negative attitude towards this Nazi guy, which is completely well-deserved. But instead of him just going off and killing him on his own, actually asking Wolverine to do it, I don't know. It shows us a pretty significant change in the character.
Yeah.
Adding to what's already been going on in all the other X-Men books.
Yeah, it really shows that this guy is You know, I mean, it's pretty amazing that this bit of characterization took place in this book and not in one of the books that he really is the main star of, like, you know, like X-Men Legacy or Uncanny. I just thought that this really said something about him, kind of shows that, you know, that scared kid that escaped, you know, young Max Eisenhardt is still in, you know, in there. You know, he's still scared of these people that pretty much screwed up his life and his family. So yeah. it really said a lot. And of course, Wolverine taking the job, even though Magneto is one of his, like, even though they're both X-Men right now, they've had a lot of fights. You know, they've fought each other many times, and the fact that Wolverine understood why, you know, the fact that he did the job for Magneto, it really says something about him also, because he's kind of over the whole, you know, there's no grudge. He looks at Magneto and is like, man, this dude really spooks him.
Well, you know? I think you could probably make parallels between, you know, Magneto being in the concentration camps as a child and Wolverine getting completely tortured during Weapon X.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's definitely something understanding about Wolverine of Magneto and his situation.
Yeah. And I thought it was really cool that Wolverine was able to empathize, and the way he handled it too. I mean, it was what he did was pretty much a mercy killing too, because the more we find out about the intended victim, you know, the fact that he's alone now, his happiest days are behind him. He kind of did the guy a favor too, you know, even though he was, you know, he was one of those guys, one of those Nazis who escaped, you know, capture. They kind of said that this guy has a bit of humanity too. All these people, these are all about people that have changed or like kind of trying to escape their pasts and then like, you know, past catching up to them. And that's right. Why there's a lot of layers going on. There's a lot of subtext going on in every scene in this book. And I thought, I mean, I mentioned that I'm not really that big of a fan of Billy Tam's art, but I think his storytelling is great. I think it's just his. I think his actual rendering is not. I mean, I do not like the way he draws Magneto's helmet, because Magneto looks like he has a very big bucket on his head and not a helmet in the pages. And like, again, I mean, no disrespect to the guy, because I think the storytelling is top notch, you know. And like I said, he shines when he's good. He really shines. But there's a lot here. There's a lot of work that Dean White had to do in this.
Yeah, issue. There was a lot of heavy lifting by Dean White.
And
but it looks gorgeous.
It looks good, except when you show Magneto with a helmet on. But otherwise, this has been a really good issue. I like how the dialogue was pretty sparse for the most part. You know, Wolverine doesn't really speak after he agrees to do it, and I like that. You don't know exactly what he's thinking while he's doing it, you know, and it's really, I like the subtlety, you know. I really like the way the nuanced writing here, basically.
It was just another job for Wolverine. I mean, yeah. I think underneath it all, he understood. But at the same time, if you look at the panel right as he kills the guy, mm-hmm. like his face, there's no emotion. His eyes are dead.
Yeah.
Because he's done this so many times that I don't think he feels anymore.
Yeah,
like if it's someone significant, I'm sure there's some part of him where he feels something. But I mean, what, Wolverine's been alive like over 100 years now, probably longer. So he's been doing this for a long time.
Yeah,
and I have no personal experience killing people.
Yeah, I don't think any of us would have, but you know.
But at the same time, with the amount of people Wolverine has killed, especially when they show him going into like berserker rage and just randomly killing like AIM and Hydra agents and all that stuff, he's killed a lot of fucking people.
And I
think at some point, even though there are some parts, sometimes, you know, Wolverine has like, you know, life is important and every life matters. At the same time, he's killed so many people that sometimes it doesn't matter.
Yeah, sometimes they're just, you know, it's like second nature to him now, you know, killing.
Yeah.
People. And no matter how, you know how hard he fought to basically, you know, to to prevent, you know, that side of him from going out. But the fact is he's killed so much in cold blood at this point that, you know, they're basically the same. So eventually he's going to come to a head and it's going to catch up to him.
Right.
And they're foreshadowing that. Yeah.
Right. The guy warns him about that. You know, but I agree, man. I mean, I think the guy, it was so well done. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as Wolverine arrives to kill this guy, doesn't say a word for the rest of the comic.
Yeah.
It's just the guy talking. Mm-hmm. And it's not him talking because he knows he's going to die. Mm-hmm. It's like a last rites. It's like a confession.
Yeah. And you know, he knows what's coming.
He knows what's coming,
and he's not afraid. Because he knew this is what's coming to him. You know, he knows. Yeah,
his warning to Wolverine wasn't just a warning for him, for Wolverine, but it was just something he's come to realize.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very well done.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Like I said, Remender, he's just killing it with this book, man. I mean, poor choice of words, but this book is probably one of the best things Marvel's been putting out. I mean,
I absolutely agree.
Who would have thought an X-Force book? I mean, I liked, you know, the previous incarnation of X-Force with a somewhat bigger team, and I thought that was great. And I love Kyle and Yost, but man, Remender is really, really.
I think this is a different. I mean, they maybe both be called X-Force, but they're definitely a horse of different color.
Yeah, but in the end, they're just, you know, they're basically hit squads, you know, trying to kill people.
I know, and I think this story and the story before it, mm-hmm. and the next story with Archangel, mm-hmm. I think the themes are leading into that whole Age of Apocalypse storyline.
They've kind of
especially when you know because these characters, some of these characters are going to meet like alternate future versions of themselves, mm-hmm. and then you know it's like a literal look at yourself in the mirror or whatever.
Oh yeah.
So it'll be interesting. I mean, it'll be interesting how Remender handles it, and I look forward to seeing what he does.
Same here, man. All right, we'll jump on to the next book, and that is Moon Knight number one by Brian Michael Bendis, Alex Maleev, and colored by Matt Wilson, who's another one of those guys who's kind of rising up because he's been doing a lot of really cool books, and yeah. I didn't think Wilson was someone that would work well with Maleev, but he pulls it off.
Yeah, I was honest. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm not. You're more artistic than I am, so sometimes I really don't look at colorists. I mean, I've been looking at more colorists and, you know, inkers and stuff like that. So I was actually kind of surprised when I read the book that it wasn't colored by Matt Hollingsworth.
Yeah, I'm used to Matt Hollingsworth or there's a couple other guys that color Maleev, or Maleev himself, actually.
Yeah, Maleev himself.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's busy with Scarlet, too.
Yeah. So this issue, it basically reestablishes Moon Knight, the character, and they kind of came up with a new twist to him. Yes, he's a schizophrenic, you know, ex-mercenary, ex-military guy who's, you know, moonlighting as a superhero. And usually he would have like a different, you know, he has multiple personalities.
Yeah.
This one, they went with a different twist because instead of like the usual, you know, personalities that we see Moon Knight afflicted by, this time around he's kind of, he's been hanging around superheroes for quite a bit of time at this point. And so he is, all of a sudden, his multiple personalities feature Wolverine, Captain America, and Spider-Man. And it's pretty interesting. He's taken inspiration from these guys. But before we kind of go any further, and one need to establish the fact that, you know, Mark Spector, a.k.a. Moon Knight, has relocated to L.A., and he's
the toast of the town.
Yeah. He has a new TV – he produced a new TV show which is based on himself, and of course, nobody knows that that's what his life is really about, but I thought that was pretty funny.
He's going to be bigger than Xena.
Yeah, it is. And then, of course, there's the supervillains, of course, are starting to make their move and moving to the West Coast because, of course, L.A. New York is, like, too well protected at this point.
You know, that I thought that was a funny point in, like, I mean, I guess they did it with, like, the West Coast Avengers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess that's an issue. Because, mm-hmm. like, almost every superhero team or superhero is pretty much based out of New York in Marvel Comics.
Yeah, they're in New York or in the East Coast somewhere.
Right. I mean, except for the X-Men now, who are in San Francisco. But even up to a point, the X-Men were all in New York.
They still pop up in New York.
I mean, and most of the time the stories didn't take place in New York, mm-hmm. but they were still based from New York. Mm-hmm. So, to me, this kind of reminded me of, not in theme or anything, just in ideas, mm-hmm. when Geoff Johns introduced the different colored lanterns. Because it was like such a doy idea that how the hell did no one come up with this beforehand?
Oh, yeah.
And to have the villains move from New York to another coast in another big city, you know, L.A., it's just like it made sense. There's been little dribbles and drabbles of it in other books, but nothing too major. I think the only other book I can remember recently within the last few years is Runaways.
Oh yeah, they're the only other team that
were
the only people that took that were in the West Coast, basically.
Right, exactly. So just moving a hero who's schizophrenic to L.A. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's like, how did no one, like, just do that years ago? Like, how did this not come up, like, during Secret Invasion or, like, Civil War or not House of M, I guess, but still, I guess it kind of came up in Civil War, but, like, you know, with a different, you know, the 50 State Initiative or whatever.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it was still focused in New York.
Oh, yeah. So this is the first book that they had that's really set in a major city in the West Coast, in L.A. particularly. And, you know, we get Mr. Hyde, who is apparently trying to sell a dead Ultron. And, of course, it gets all kinds of crazy. Because, you know, Moon Knight takes him on, and, of course, he's normally not in Moon Knight's not in this guy's league as far as power is concerned, because this guy's one of those guys that would pick fights with Captain America or Thor, not Moon Knight. And he makes it through just fine, and he survives it. And the thing that I love about this book is the trick, basically, that Brian Bendis and Alex Maleev pull on you, because it starts out with with Spectre having a conversation with Wolverine, Captain America, and Spider-Man, and the book kind of ends with that conversation, you know, a continuation of that conversation, because, you know, you wouldn't think that there's anything going on, because, you know, we know that Mark is, a secret Avenger, and he has ties with all these people. But when you get to that last page, it turns out every time we saw Cap, Spider-Man, and Wolverine, they weren't really there. It's all going on in his head.
Right. I love how that played out.
Yeah.
Because at the beginning, you're like, oh, he's just, you know, he's talking to them. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. He's in L.A. He's a secret Avenger. I mean, when fucking Captain America gives you the call, you don't say no.
Yeah.
So, you know, it makes sense. And to bring in Spider-Man and Wolverine, I mean, because even though this is a Brian Michael Bendis book and an Alex Maleev book, it's still Moon Knight. It's a hard sell. Mm-hmm. As you know, especially at $3.99, it's like, well, we got to give these people a reason to pick up a book. And you know, for us, we follow writers and artists that we like, so this was like a no brainer.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you got to think of the reader who sees this and is like, oh, why should I bother with a new Moon Knight book? You know. But at the beginning, you totally fall for it. I fell for it.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. Especially the way the conversation went between, like, Wolverine and him and Spider-Man. It's like he really captured Wolverine and Spider-Man and Cap as these characters. And then that last page, you realize, yeah, shit, he's been talking to himself the entire time.
I know. It's amazing how they pulled that off, because I mean, I knew coming into this that that's, you know, that the premise was basically him, and he's, you know, he's kind of taken to Wolverine, Spider-Man, and Captain America, and, you know, and he's kind of emulating them. You know, his personalities are. But I didn't, you know, but and then you read the book because it felt so natural. It looks like, hey, he's talking to these guys because right, they're all exactly. Avengers.
Yeah.
And damn it, I was fooled, and when I got to the end, it's like, oh my God, of course.
It's like, yeah. A Moon Knight book. Oh my God, of course this is happening.
Yeah, I knew it, you know, and it's like, you forget what you know, and you just get sucked in by the story, and you don't realize that you were being, you know, that you were being led along into thinking one thing, and then, you know, making you, and you forget that this is what's really going on. And
yeah,
it's a really cool trick that Bendis pulled, and it's nice to see that, you know, the guy still has it in him to kind of lead a reader along and believing one thing, even though they already know that what the main concept of the book is about. You know, I think that's very smart writing. I think it's very clever, and I can't wait to see what he does next with this character. Yeah. What he plans to do next, because
I just, you know what. What I liked most about this book was just reading. I love when Bendis does dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, I love for some reason, I think my biggest thing is I like reading people talking, you know, uh-huh. Like I love it. Like, that's why I like Aaron Sorkin so much. Mm-hmm. And you know, Bendis has said multiple times that Aaron Sorkin's been a big inspiration to him, and like David Mamet and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, Bendis is just so good at it, and you know, like those two pages with the thugs just talking, I loved it.
Yeah, it's great. It kind of shows you, you know, it shows you that there's personality to these people and that there's more to them. And then when something happens to them, good or bad, you know, you kind of learn to care, you know, which is quite fantastic. So,
but you know, Spider-Man and Wolverine talking.
Yeah.
Always funny. He still wanted to see if you were still crazy.
Man.
Yeah. I was looking forward to this book a lot, and I kind of hyped it up for myself, and I really enjoyed it. The, you know, classic Bendis with the dialogue, but then at the same time knowing the strength of Alex Maleev's art, mm-hmm. and letting the art do all the work sometimes, you know, when Mr. Hyde attacks the two thugs, and when Moon Knight attacks, you know, very little to no dialogue, and just letting the art tell the story, you know, because it's Alex Maleev. Alex Maleev is a master storyteller. So, yeah, man, fantastic book all around.
Yeah, I thought his fight choreography has also been improved quite a bit. Like, I mean, we've seen the way he handles his fight choreography when he was on Daredevil, and at that time, he's not really known for good action sequences. I mean, he does some good stuff. But then in this, he really shows his maturity as far as his, you know, as far as those sequences are concerned. Because, like, the fight flowed a little better, and then like all the other moments, everything just kind of ties together really well. One leads into the other. I thought this is some of his strongest storytelling, and I love this newer, rougher style. And you can tell
it's the Daredevil artist and the Scarlet artist, mm-hmm. but at the same time, it's still different. It's a distinct look. It's different from Daredevil. It's different from Scarlet, mm-hmm. but yet it's still Alex Maleev.
Yeah, exactly. There is, you know it's him. I mean, he draws people, he draws faces a certain way, and it's pretty astounding how it looks looser, you know what I mean? It's looser,
yes.
And it's not tightly penciled like, say, Scarlet, or even some of his, some of the stuff he's done recently, like Spider-Woman, but this is looser. It looks like it's hand-drawn, though. I'm pretty sure it's not, because he does digital. He's just very confident with his line work at this point.
And it looks like he's having a blast with this book, honestly. It shows when two creators, mm-hmm. just are having fun with a book. Another point in the story that I wanted to bring up is, you know, after reading the point one issue of Avengers,
uh-huh.
by Bendis and Brian Hitch, mm-hmm. it's interesting that they bring in Ultron.
Yeah, that is interesting, considering all that. But, I guess we'll find out what happens next. I don't know if one ties to the other. That should be interesting, at least.
With Bendis writing both books, I'm sure it's not an accident.
Yeah, there's something up. So
it's definitely done on purpose.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to whatever comes up. I'm sold. I'm hooked on this book. And Moon Knight was not really one of my favorite characters. I like the character enough.
The previous run by Charlie Houston, and then followed up by Mike Benson, and then Greg Hurwitz. I enjoyed it.
I like those too. I stuck around for most of that stuff, I stuck around mostly for the writers, but you know,
yeah,
the character was never really still never one of my favorites. But you know, who knows? By the end of this, if this book, does well, hopefully, that could always change. We'll move on to the next book. And once again, Moon Knight number one by Bendis and Malieu. Be sure to pick it up because it's Bendis doing something a little different. And it's Bendis kind of showing you, what he's capable of doing when he's into something. And again, I want to say, just because we spoiled something doesn't mean you can't read it, because nothing beats reading the actual book itself.
Yeah, I accidentally spoiled it for Pat, and he still loved it.
Next up is Fear
Itself.
Fear Itself number 2 by Matt Fraction, Stuart Immonen, Wade Von Grawbadger, and Laura Martin. And this picks up right where the previous issue left off. The Asgardians have turned tail and went back home to where Asgard used to be. Odin, of course, is still in a really pissy mood.
Yeah, he ain't happy.
Yeah, he ain't happy at all. And the first thing I want to say is Stuart Immonen's art is phenomenal, as usual.
Killing it.
Yes. And, man, I love the way – I love how he seems to just know how to draw all these characters, even characters that he's never really drawn before. It's cool to see him drawing the Asgardians again, because he was on Thor briefly in the early 2000s when Dan Jurgens was still on the book, and he did some fine work there. And it's just cool. He was born to draw Asgardian characters. He was born to draw that.
He was born to draw. Yeah. I mean, you look at this book and he's not just drawing New Avengers or Fantastic Four. He's drawing everything in the Marvel universe.
Exactly.
And everything looks spectacular.
It really does.
Not miss a beat at all. Mm-hmm.
He's also such a great storyteller.
Yes.
The way his layouts are great. It's easy to follow, and it makes you follow the panels as they move, as they flow. I thought there's a lot of really cool bits here. Of course, we are introduced to who the Worthy are. The first one being the Juggernaut. And I only had one minor gripe about Fear Itself in general is the fact that they took the Juggernaut away from Thunderbolts, because he's become such a great character in that book. Jeff Parker was doing tremendous work with that character, building him up, and then of course the event kind of had need for the character, so they took him, and they'll probably need to replace him with someone else. But
it's nice to see Juggernaut get a spotlight, though.
Yeah, this is cool because he's always been one of the coolest looking characters in the Marvel universe.
Yeah,
and he got turned into a Kurth, Breaker of Stone.
And I always loved when Juggernaut showed up in like the X-Men cartoon.
Uh-huh. What's that?
I said I always loved when Juggernaut showed up in the X-Men cartoon. Or in that, it was just cool. He's such a cool character. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they're yeah. But Kurth, Breaker of Stone, looks so badass.
Yeah. And then the next, the next one, of course, was the Hulk.
There's a panel in between that where they show the Grey Guardian. Was it the Grey Guardian?
Grey Gargoyle?
Gargoyle, right. The Grey Gargoyle seeing where a hammer has landed and going to get it. And gets followed up in Fraction's Iron Man. Man.
Yeah. And then the next issue I think of, though, there's a hammer that lands in Yancey Street, which...
Yeah.
Well, we know where that's going, but...
Yeah, we know where that's going.
Yeah. You can kind of guess, but I'm not going to say it here because that issue's not out yet, so we'll see.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's not a spoiler if it's speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Just reminder. But yeah, then it was the Hulk.
Yeah, the
which,
Hulk.
You know, I'm not a huge Hulk fan.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, again, you got to compliment Stuart Immonen for the way he draws these characters. He just has them down. Always.
Yeah. And man, when he got turned into Null, the Breaker of Worlds, I thought that was pretty badass. I love the design on him, and I like how he's Null, the Breaker of Worlds. I mean, come on. The World Breaker, you know, from back from the Planet Hulk time.
Oh, yeah, right. That's what they called him.
Yeah, the World Planet Breaker. Hulk.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a nice callback. I also really like the writing. I liked how Fraction wrote Banner and Betty here. I think he's been paying attention to the Hulk books, obviously, because he really nailed them here and the characterization. And I love how, you know, when Bruce becomes Null, and the first thing he does is he tries to get Betty to run. Because he's dangerous, and you can still feel just by the way because they show you how powerful the influence of these hammers are. You know, they show you how strong it is. So the fact that he's trying to take control. He's trying to make sure his wife or ex-wife, whatever you want to call her, is safe.
Well, I think they said they were married.
They were married, but she died. So technically,
oh really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a long story. We'll not get into that here.
Okay.
And the next hammer, of course, ends up in South Africa, and it ends up in the hands of Titania. After, of course, the Absorbing Man tried to pick it up and failed. I really love the way they've been introducing all these, you know, these characters. I have one small gripe again is the fact that the Atuma didn't get enough of an intro here, because you see him already transformed into Nirkad, the Breaker of Oceans. But he should have gotten a cool intro, because he's one of those cool-looking characters from the Kirby design.
I'm actually... I'm pretty sure he'll probably get an introduction in, like, that...
In The Deep?
That miniseries with Doctor Strange and Namor.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, I'm just, you know, because a bunch of characters got some really big introductions in this book. And I guess you only have so much pages to work with. So, again,
exactly.
No issue with that. I just thought it was, they could have gotten a bit, he could have gotten more out of that.
Yeah.
At any rate, though, yeah, they moved from that to that point. And then we have... Of course, we have Sin and her people, whatever they are, in their Nazi robot suits attacking Washington, D.C., which is pretty insane.
But it's a Serpent.
Yeah, what's that?
That's Sin with the Serpent, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It looks like a really scary time to be living in the Marvel Universe, because there's some major things going on. And they built up... Like, throughout the whole issue, there's, like, this impending sense of doom, this impending sense of dread that seems to escalate with each page you read, because all of a sudden, I mean, it starts out, you know, there's riots or there's, you know, all kinds of things going on. Actually, no, it starts out with Asgard, but you already know that even these gods are afraid of what's going on.
Yeah, they want to get away.
Yeah, and then there's, you know, then you've got heavy hitter like the Juggernaut transformed. Then you get, you know, the Hulk, and then, yeah, things just start happening, things start to escalate, things start to get worse. And when you get to the end, you know, when that thing, that big spread of Washington, D.C. under attack, it really shows you just how, you know, epic. How dire it is. And yeah, it shows us the largeness of the scope of this story. So, yeah, Fear itself, yeah, Fraction, he really knows what he's doing here. He knows what he's... what he's trying to do to get people interested, and you know, and of course, there's a lot of shocking sights here, a lot of big moments. There's a lot of money shots here, you know. It's true though. There's a lot of money shots here, and then
it's.
You just realize how screwed the heroes are.
I think the really cool thing about this crossover event or whatever you want to call it, I call it a comic book, just a hell of a lot of fun, is unlike unlike Secret Invasion or like Civil War, I have no fucking idea or can't even begin to just make up an idea of where the fuck this is going.
That's the part of the fun, you know. It's like,
and that's the fun part.
Yeah, that's the most fun part, because when Civil War was going on, at the end of, you know, one side has to win, and once you pick which side you want to win, you can kind of surmise where they'll go, you know, what's going to happen. The same with Secret Invasion. Although, you know, they kind of trick you at the end of Secret Invasion because they tacked on the Norman Osborn thing. That was completely unexpected. But, you know, one way or another, this whole Skrull thing will end. It'll be a new status quo. And here, I don't know what possible status quo they can do. I don't know what's going to happen.
I don't know. I have no idea where it's going. And you know what? We know the heroes eventually will come together and prevail. But no, you know, there's a couple of things. We don't know at what cost. Mm-hmm. We don't know how things are going to change.
Mm-hmm. Well, we already know, though, that, you know, that they're doing a roster change in the Avengers, so that's pretty big.
Right.
The fact that that's coming.
But, you know, still, at the same time, we don't know exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the other thing is, now all these different hammers are in play. So even after, you know, let's say you get them off the Gray Gargoyle and Juggernaut and, you know, Titania, what happens to these hammers? Because, you know, they can't possibly set all this up for someone like Tony Stark or Captain America to just put them away somewhere. These hammers are going to stay in play, I think, after this whole event is over.
Yeah, they're just not going to go away. And also, you can't also forget the fact that all this stuff happened. So all these people who, you know, all these people that were affected, they're going to pay for it too in some form or fashion because of, you know, because of what ended up happening, you know?
Right.
So there's going to be all kinds of stuff going on, and it should be very interesting to see where Fraction and, of course, the rest of the creative team is going to take it. But I'm really pleased with this, and, you know, I chatted with him a couple weeks ago, and we talked about this for a bit, and, you know, he's basically working on the last three strips all at the same time. So he has a plan. Marvel has really good plans to what's going to happen after this, and I like how they're being very careful, making sure every writer that's involved in the events and in the tie-ins, you know, like, you know, syncs up with whatever he's doing properly. So
I like that.
I really look forward
I'm looking forward to the Bendis's tie-in stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to it. So, with that out of the way, let's move on to Thor, the movie. Thor, of course, stars Chris Hemsworth, Tom Hiddleston, Natalie Portman, Anthony Hopkins, Idris Elba, Kat Dennings, and so many more.
Yeah.
It was
a great cast.
Great cast, yeah, all of them. Like even the supporting cast, and even like the folks who were only there for like what, a couple minutes or so. Everyone was pretty great in this movie, and of course, this is directed by Kenneth Branagh. And man, this dude, he knows how it's done, man. I think he picked up like some of the best things about what Jon Favreau has done in Iron Man. And he's incorporated into this because he made this movie very accessible to anyone. They were very careful in making sure to explain everything about Asgard without kind of hitting you over the head with it.
Yep.
And, you know, you start off within the first 20 minutes, you know what's up. It's really interesting, you know, how the whole setup was. And I like the somewhat sci-fi bent, you know, the kind of sci-fi, feel they gave this thing, even though it's about Norse mythology.
Yeah, those opening shots where you're traveling to Asgard, mm-hmm.
Oh man, that was beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. Yeah,
it's beautiful. Like when you know you kind of start from underneath the city, then you go through the water, yeah. and then when you finally see the whole city, it's just.
Yeah, I loved the camera work in this movie. Yeah. I thought it just flowed. It was nice. It was just really well done. I loved all the flips and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, Rainbow Road looked
the Bifrost. Awesome.
The what is it, Jordanheim?
Jotunheim, yeah.
Jotunheim? Oh my God! Like all these different worlds, so distinctly different from each other. Just well done on like the special effects crew and the designers and everyone, because it really looked magical, epic. You know, on this just grand scale, it looked gorgeous.
Yeah, like, it is an amazing.
I'm so impressed.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that they could pull that off? I mean, the reason why I talk about, I talk about Thor. Like, I'm always shocked that Thor is, you know, being made because, well, for one thing, it's got one of the most, like, it's just one of the most unbelievable looking things. I mean, how do you put like a world of gods, you know, onto the screen? And I mean, there are different interpretations, and I'm surprised they went with a more very Kirby-esque look to it. Like, I mean, all of the crazy architecture, and it's like nothing you've ever seen, you know? I was just in awe as I saw them, like, they moved through the city, and there are scenes where they ride their horses towards the Bifrost, and you just see them running on that bridge, and you just see the city in the background. I'm just like, wow, it's such a visual spectacle, you know?
Yeah, it really was. And like I don't remember the trailers. I think the trailers mostly showed Thor on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't really get to see like much of Asgard in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go into this theater and you see this, mm-hmm. and you see how great it looks, it really blows you away. And you know, I to compare it to like other films, I guess you can compare it to like Avatar, the first time you see Pandora, mm-hmm. even though that movie was fucking terrible. visually, that movie was stunning.
It really is.
the same thing with here. Mm-hmm. And I think, it just looked fantastic. And it looked real. Like, obviously, it's not real. And, you know, but, like, they made the sets, some of the sets. But still, it looked like it could be real.
Yes. Man, I want to live there.
Oa in the Green Lantern trailer, unfortunately.
Well, I'm not going to get into that. We'll talk about the Green Lantern.
I'm comparing, like, trailer, you know, just for, you know, to like put it in perspective for people,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I wasn't impressed with when I saw the Green Lantern trailer, though, you know, they're Warner Brothers, you know, threw in $10 million more for the special effects for Green Lantern, but man, the visuals in this movie are just outstanding.
It really outstanding. Is.
It made the movie.
It really did, and I kind of wish they spent more time in Asgard because I don't mind getting lost in that in all that stuff.
Yeah,
and I think they did a pretty good job splitting time between Asgard and Earth, and
Jotunheim.
Yeah, in Jotunheim, yes, they did a pretty good job balancing everything. They did a really good job explaining all the characters and all the motivations, and man, the acting. Of all, I'm just amazed by the caliber of acting we got here. I mean, Sir Anthony Hopkins. I mean, he hasn't really done anything lately that's been phenomenal, right, you know. But man, he really put his all into this. He's been, you know.
Not to keep talking about the visual effects, mm-hmm. but de-aging him as a young Odin. Awesome.
And he doesn't look creepy.
Well, no. Yeah, he doesn't look creepy like Jeff Bridges did in
Tron.
In Tron, or, you know, Alien, Charles Xavier at the end of Wolverine. It looked really good.
Man. That Charles Xavier from the end of Wolverine. I can't even keep a straight face just thinking about that. at any rate, though. Yeah.
Oh, he helped Wolverine find his jacket, so.
And there were so many, on the visual aspect, again, there were so many Easter eggs.
It was fantastic. It was what it needed to be. Yeah. And, like, it exceeded all expectations.
It really did. And it wasn't the Thor movie that we needed, but the one that we deserved.
Yeah. And I didn't even think we deserved the Thor movie, to be honest with you.
This movie
delivered on, like, everything.
Yeah, I'm kind of in awe and in shock as well at how much I love this movie. Let's kind of get into the plot first. We already know the if you've seen the trailers, you can kind of figure out what happens. Thor screws up and does something really bad. He gets banished to Earth so that he'd learn to be, he would learn humility. And when he was banished, he was depowered, and of course, he has no, he's basically just a normal guy, and now he has to learn his lesson. And while he's stuck on Earth, there's all kinds of machinations going on in Asgard, particularly involving Loki. Eventually, both plots, come together, and man, it was done really well too. How both ended up intertwining, and. They have a lot of great Asgardian characters that, if you're a fan of the comic book or know enough about Norse mythology, like where some of these characters already appeared, then you will know, who Heimdall is and what his purpose is and why he's important, and Sif and all these characters.
The Warriors Three.
It's really well done. I can't praise this movie enough because I've been a big Thor fan for a long time and just never thought this would happen, and I didn't really think it would come out and it would actually be good, which is what it was. The plot was pretty straightforward, but the thing that really elevates the plot is the acting. There's a lot of subtlety, there's a lot of nuances in the performances of particularly Hiddleston and as Loki and Hemsworth as Thor. Because the facial expressions are great, the reactions, it's pretty good, man. It really elevated what's otherwise could be it's somewhat of a regular story, And I am actually a friend of mine once had told me, he was comparing Iron Man, the first movie, to this one because. Basically, the plots are very similar. It's about a guy who's basically they think they're at a certain level, they are at a certain level, and then something happens and they get taken down and forced to see what it's like to be just another person. And then of course, being a regular guy they learn. They learn humility. They realize that they were selfish, and then they basically got to rise up and be better people.
A hero, yeah. Better people, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's a good arc, but the difference between the two, I thought, was that in Thor, I think Thor really had to endure a lot more compared to Iron Man, because Iron Man, he went through all that crap, he got captured or whatever. But
with Iron Man, Iron Man got captured and stuff, and then after that, he decided to do good. But yeah, Thor,
he basically was forced to endure what happened to him. When he got captured by the hospital, he had to endure all this other stuff at the same time, learning
this
that
betrayal from Loki.
Yeah, and
his father on his deathbed.
Yeah, all this stuff going on.
We're close to death, yeah. It was a lot of fun, realizing that maybe you'll never see your home again.
Yeah, and that really...
Coming to terms with the fact that you might not even get your powers back.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, with that, with all that plot, going on, all that going on with him, you when he finally arises a hero, you really want to root for the guy, because you know what? And the thing is, even though he was normal, he did try to be a hero, you know, because he realized the error of his ways, and he's trying to make things right.
Yeah.
And eventually he became worthy of the power again, and he became worthy to...
I think the difference between Thor and Iron Man is that Thor learned his lesson, and he knows, and he needed... You know, he learned his lesson. Mm-hmm. Where Tony Stark
is still a dick.
he kind of learned his lesson, but at the same time, he's like, I know this now, so I can still be kind of an asshole.
And that's what makes them different characters too. That is part of what makes both characters great.
Right, but, and it's kind of like the opposite. It's still like a similar storyline, but kind of like the opposite of Steve Rogers and Captain America. Mm-hmm. Where he didn't have this power, he wanted he was just a regular dude who wanted to fight, mm-hmm. but he couldn't because he was so frail and weak, mm-hmm. and you know, the opportunity to just come to have some power, mm-hmm. and be able to fight for his country, mm-hmm. you know, it's a similar story, but even though it's a little bit different, which is, you know, they're all similar stories, but they're all a little different. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't wait to see how the Captain America movie plays out, though. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I honestly thought, I think Cap has a lot to live up to now with seeing Thor.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. But, you know, back to Thor, the journey that Thor goes through is really, you know, it's really believable. You end up rooting for the guy because at first you really don't know what to make of this guy, and then he does, you know, things happen and he realizes.
Yeah, I love that scene in the beginning where he's coming into the castle and he's just walking around and smiling and you know, flipping his hammer and shit. It was fucking funny.
Yeah. And you know what's cool is that, you know, like when the moment that happens at the end, you know, starts when you know, the hammer, like, you know, flies up to, you know, to him, the crowd was the audience was really getting into it. You know, they were cheering, mm-hmm. and that was great. I mean, okay, wow, they did it. They did their job. These guys are rooting for this guy now. That really says a lot, you know, as far as the characterizations go as far as... I mean, and I like the fact that they inserted enough humor in there. They weren't really super serious about everything. That they, you know, they were able to, you know, they lightened the mood a bit, because there's some heavy stuff going on there with, you know, the stuff in Asgard. And he's on Earth, but he's on Earth, and you just... You want to see this guy just get into all these funny situations because the whole fish out of water thing, you know? It's just great. It's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as the movie goes, what are some of your favorite moments?
My favorite moment was when he walked into the pet shop. I thought that was fantastic. When he walks into the pet shop and he's like, I want a horse! And the guy's like... we don't have horses. We have dogs and cats and lizards. And then Thor's like, give me one large enough to ride. I just thought that was so funny. I think that was like the best fish out of water moment. I love that part. But I love the fight scene at the beginning with the Frost Giants was awesome.
That was really cool, yes. I really loved that.
I'm going to... You know, we said we're spoiling this, so you've been warned. The Hawkeye cameo was fucking amazing.
Yeah, I thought that was great. The whole... we need a man up there with a gun, and then, like, you see this guy going through the weapons rack, and he picks the bow.
And then he grabs the bow. And, like, honestly, I read rumors online that Hawkeye was going to show up in the movie, but I didn't, for some reason, I just refused to believe them. Mm-hmm. And then I thought at first when they showed the guy grabbing the bow, I thought it was going to be all like secret and shit, mm-hmm. but then they show Jeremy Renner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they called him Barton, you know?
Yeah. He called him by his name and then, but it was such a fucking tease, mm-hmm. because he has his fucking bow and arrow, and he's ready to throw, and he's like, you know what, mm-hmm. stand down. And I was like, oh my God, I can't fucking wait to see the Avengers movie.
Yeah, they gave us enough.
It did such a great job telling the story of Thor, and at the same time getting you excited for. I mean, like, we know that because we're comic book fans, so there were a lot of like small details that in the movie that were specifically for fans, and that moment, the Hawkeye moment, was like the biggest you know, fan moment.
Because we're
nerds. We know we know Avengers is coming, you know. We know this. So I love those moments. And there for some reason, I mean, probably not. It's probably about average with all the other Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. But I for me, even though I'm not a huge Thor fan, I saw a lot more like little, you know, flashes of like, oh, here's for the fans moment, you know. Yeah. Like when she gives him the shirt and it says Dr. Donald Blake on it.
Yeah. Now I know they were actually at Comic-Con last year. People who went to the Thor panel were given shorts, that T-shirt that had that sticker on
it. Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were giving that. I was like, oh, that explains it. I wish I got one.
I don't know if you noticed, I think when Destroyer was... like, you know, destroying the town or whatever, there was a poster for, like, hiking or whatever.
It's a journey into mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that.
Not what the first part said, but then it said journey into mystery, which is where, you know, Thor debuted.
Yes.
You know, it was a lot. I just enjoyed the movie so much.
Yeah, man, there's so much in there. They do a really good Stanley, even JMS. I'm not the biggest JMS fan, as you know, but I do, you know, I give credit where it's due because, you know, the current Thor wouldn't exist without him.
Right.
The fact that he's the guy that tries to pick up the hammer first because, you know, he did that story with the hammer. Like, that's awesome.
What surprised me about that, the JMS thing, though, that he also got a story credit, which I didn't know that was happening.
But yeah, he probably worked on an earlier idea of the movie or something. But
I guess,
you know,
before he shit on Marvel, but that's another thing.
It doesn't matter at this point. I mean, the fact that, you know, it's pretty classy of them to hook him up and put him in there, though, you know.
Yeah, and then Walt Simonson
at the end, like, sitting next to Sif at the dinner table, you know, when everyone's celebrating. I thought, man, of course Walt will be hanging out with the gods because he's, you know, he wrote the best Thor.
Yeah. You know?
So I was like, man, that's great. I loved it. Honestly, I was a little misty-eyed when I saw Simonson there because, like, oh, that's awesome. They put him there. That's great. You know, that's just great because they recognize that what that guy, you know, means, what the character, you know, what that guy brought to the character, because pretty much everything that's happened since then, you know, everyone's basically trying to do their Walt Simonson Thor. And, you know, That's a really cool tribute to the guy, but putting him in that scene with all the gods and like sitting with the Warriors 3 and Sif, you know, that is awesome. But yeah, I'm you know, man, there's just so many little bits that are so great. So many, you know, I love the Destroyer, man. That
was so, like, there's nothing else. There's no other way to describe it as just fucking cool.
Yeah,
that was so cool.
Yeah, and the fact that he pretty much looks exactly what he looks like in the comics. And it just got to see the destructive capabilities of that thing. It's just like, wow. I could watch a movie of him destroying, like, everything.
Yeah. Oh, man. And that scene where, like, Sif stabs him in the back, and then he just turns around.
Mm-hmm. No, that was cool how he turned around.
You know, kind of like Transformer-ish. Mm-hmm. It was so – it was just cool.
Yeah.
It was a blast. What was your favorite helmet? Like the Thor helmet or Loki helmet or the Odin helmet?
I like the Loki helmet a lot.
Yeah, dude, me too. I love the color of it and those long horns.
I'm amazed they pulled off. I'm so amazed that they pulled off the horns. I thought that was really well done. Because it's like, okay, I wonder how they'll pull that off because that'll look ridiculous. And then there it is. You're seeing him move right in front of you. And then, man, Loki looked really cool. He really played the part when he became king for that little bit. He really played it off really well. You know, he looks like
Superman. Yeah, totally. So totally.
He plays off like someone who's been waiting to do this for the longest time. Now he gets to do it, and so he's prepared. Yeah, there's a lot. Again, a lot in the characters, a lot in the performances. I thought, what's his name? Heimdall was great. You know, not enough of him in that movie.
Not enough. More.
I want more of him. I want more Warriors 3. I want more Sif. Sif is awesome.
I can't wait for Thor 2. Or as they should call it, the Mighty Thor.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Avengers, but I really want to see the Thor sequel.
Yeah, hopefully, it looks like it's doing really well. It did like 29 million on Friday alone.
Oh, awesome.
And it did 3 million on midnight, you know.
Yeah.
From midnight
cool.
The day before, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. I think this is going to be one of the. It's certainly one of the most well reviewed out of the Marvel movies right now. Probably the most well reviewed one out of all of them. Actually, now that I think about it,
right.
It's really a perfect way to start off the summer movie season.
It really was. I went at midnight to see it. Friday night or Thursday night, whatever you want to call it. And I mean, it was just so much fun. It was a blast. It was so cool. Mm-hmm. Like I really there wasn't a moment where I'm like, all right, enough of this. I the entire time. Yeah, I loved it.
You were never bored. The plot moved along, and at the same time, they try to keep you entertained either with the humor.
Looked so beautiful.
Oh man, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen her look that good in a long time.
Yeah, she looked amazing. Yeah. Oh, and should we talk about the after the scene credits?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I mean, we are talking spoilers anyway.
Yeah.
All right. The cube.
Before we spoil that, I had expectations for that scene. I have not seen anything before the movie, because the footage was leaked. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any of that. So I had my expectations. I had two theories going in as to what it was going to be. Uh-huh. What did you have any idea or expectations?
No, to be quite honest with you, I wasn't even thinking of an after credit scene. I mean, I know they do that, but I wasn't thinking about it for some reason. Not until someone brought up that it's been leaked. Like, oh, I wonder what they did. I didn't bother watching it.
I had two theories. Mm-hmm. My first theory was, since Iron Man 2 ended with, them finding Thor's hammer, mm-hmm. I honestly thought that the Thor was going to end with them finding Captain America's body in the ice. It's just like you see a hand or something that in ice, mm-hmm. and it's Captain America, mm-hmm. and then you see like a submarine come up, and on the side it says like Stark Industries or S.H.I.E.L.D. or something. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be something small like that. Just something to tease the Avengers movie. Mm-hmm. Like, for some reason, well, the second theory only like jumped into my head as soon as the after the scenes credits started playing, where the doctor was looking around. Mm-hmm. I honestly thought he was kind of like gonna walk into like a room by accident, mm-hmm. and because there's a rumor going around that Avengers is going to be like there's going to be like a Skrull. One of the rumors going around is that there's going to be Skrull villains, mm-hmm. as the villains for Avengers. Mm-hmm. I honestly thought it was going to be like an Area 51 scenario where he walked into something and he just sees like a Skrull, mm-hmm. in like a vat or a tube or something. Mm-hmm. I honestly completely forgot about Nick Fury. I completely forgot about Nick Fury.
Yeah, with I thought, you mentioned it could be a teaser for Avengers or Cap, and I think if you know your Cap and your Avengers stuff, then it worked pretty well as a teaser, because it's the Cosmic Cube,
Right.
The Cosmic Cube is brought into play. Now, I think for general audiences, that's going to be a pain, because
people aren't going to get it.
Yeah, they don't know.
I think I didn't see the movie. There weren't a lot of people in my movie theater because I think a lot of people ended up going to see it in like 3D or IMAX or whatever. Yeah. And I didn't want to do 3D.
So me neither.
We went to a 2D showing, and you know, I think there was a decent amount of people, but there weren't a lot. And I think maybe like 5 people, including me, mm-hmm. reacted when we saw the Cosmic Cube. Mm-hmm. I literally went, oh shit!
Yeah, I thought when I saw that I was pretty shocked as well.
And, I was not expecting.
And there were people who reacted louder than I did, which was pretty funny because they were like, oh god, oh no, I don't want to. Somebody threw somebody in the audience.
They pulled the JR. Oh my god!
My god!
But yeah, dude, like, I was not expecting the Cosmic Cube at all.
Yeah.
And then, like, me and, like, 4 other guys were the only ones who reacted. I was like, oh, you guys read comics, huh? No one ever. Everyone else was like, what? What is that? I don't get it. And then, you know, Loki shows up, which was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait to see what they do. Obviously, Loki is going to play a part in Avengers now. And actually, he is in the cast, so I'm glad. He played a really, really good Loki. And I once again, you know, that Hiddleston really elevated that role, I thought. I can't wait to see what he does next. Hopefully, they do well enough that you know, they'll do more, and it looks like a second Thor is not, you know, not out of the question at this point.
No,
but, yeah,
but I think they're going to focus their attention on Avengers right now. I mean, the Avengers already started shooting, so I'm really looking forward to that. And I think that they're, I mean, I don't know if they'll take a break, mm-hmm. or maybe release Iron Man 3 in 2013. Because mm-hmm. they're already working on the script for that. Mm-hmm. And then, like, in 2014, maybe we'll see Thor 2 or Captain America 2 or maybe even Avengers 2.
I mean, just listen to us talking about movies that could possibly be coming out in 2014.
I know,
just
right?
Insane.
Besides the fact, you know, we've heard rumors about a Nick Fury movie or a Black Widow movie.
Mm-hmm. A S.H.I.E.L.D. movie, yeah.
Yeah, a S.H.I.E.L.D. movie. That'd be great.
I guess we'll find out soon enough. But
right.
So if there's only one reason to see Thor, what would it be?
Hawkeye. I don't know. Honestly, just Asgard. Asgard just it honestly took my fucking breath away.
Yeah.
Whenever they went back to Asgard, I loved it. I was like, yes, I want to see more of Asgard.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely that's definitely a really good reason. But seriously, if you want to go to the movie, have fun, and just, you know, you want and get to meet some really interesting, really fun characters, and you know, just have a good time. Really, there's really not much more to it. See,
right.
Because it's a lot of fun. Yeah, we spoiled it here, but that's not really the, you know, it's once again, it's about the journey, not the destination. So yeah, nothing we say here can do it justice, to be honest. So
yeah,
give it a shot. It's a lot of fun.
I really liked it, and I really want to see it again. I know you said you've seen it a couple of times already,
yeah.
And it's only been out for like 2 days.
Yes.
You fucking nerd.
Hey, whatever, dude. I, you know what?
No, I would see it again immediately. I would love to see it again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will see it again.
No, I probably will, too, because I don't...
And you
as of right fact, now, I don't think anything's coming out for the next 2 weeks that I want to see. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably just, if I'm bored or whatever, I'll go see it again.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know what? Why not? It's
you
awesome.
Go. You can't go wrong.
I loved it. Fucking hammers. It was just so good.
Yeah. See?
Really enjoyed it.
All right. And as far as the internet goes, Antonio, where can people find you?
Twitter, you know, slash Twipstar.
And that's spelled Thwipstar.
Yes, sir.
And of course, as far as me, as far as I'm concerned, you can find me at comicbooknoise.com/Loikamania, patloika.com, or twitter.com/patloika for
all. I just want to add one more thing.
Yes.
You're a fan of this podcast? Check out Pat's interviews with Matt Fraction and Jonathan Hickman. They were fucking great. Really, really cool stuff that you don't normally get to hear from creators. Just awesome, awesome interviews, and really enlightening, and, you know, just really awesome.
Speaking of interviews, we're actually going to have a few more interviews coming up in the next month. I can't release, again, I'm not going to say who's coming yet and when, but I could say there's a lot more folks who do Marvel stuff coming on. We will have some other folks. We will have some indie creators as well. There may be even a couple of DC guys. So, yeah, there's a lot of cool things coming up for this podcast. And really, I want to say thanks to everyone who listened to the last couple of shows with John and Matt. I had a good time doing them. Adam had a good time doing them. We were both very honored to be able to get, you know, to be able to conduct those interviews. And I think I'm very proud of them. Honestly, very proud of these interviews.
They were really great, man. I really enjoyed listening to you guys just talk about everything, man. It was really cool.
Yeah.
And just to hear guys talk about the industry and how much they love it. To me, as a comic book reader and as a buyer of their comics, is really rewarding to hear that this isn't just a job for them. They're not doing it for the money. They're doing it because they want to.
Yeah, and that's really what makes the comic industry so good, because everyone who's here, most of the people who are here, they love the business. They love
the people who succeed in this business. Are the people who love this business. Yeah. And with these two interviews, it shows that, you know, Fraction and Hickman are here to stay for a long time.
Thanks for the feedback, Antonio. And also for everyone else, if you'd be so inclined, please leave us a review on iTunes. It's always helpful for us. And so it's always good to know what people are enjoying. So please leave us a review, hopefully a nice one. Or even a constructive one would be fine also. Anything's good as long as there's some kind of feedback. That's always helpful. And one last thing, I just wanted to give a plug to our friends over at cheapgraphicnovels.com. Mike and his crew run a fantastic shop over in Long Beach, California. I got to meet them recently at an Anaheim Comic Con. And they have an awesome new website that has really, really deep discounts for in-stock books. Most Marvel and pretty much Marvel and DC and most of the major publishers are at 45% off to start with. And there's plenty of others to choose from. Really, really, really good prices for everything. And they also specialize in other hard to find books. So give them a look. They are a really, really cool business that's just starting out. And I think they're well worth everyone's support. So check out cheapgraphicnovels.com. And if you're in the Long Beach area, look up Pulp Fiction, because that's the name of their brick and mortar store. So once again, cheapgraphicnovels.com. Give them a try, and you will thank me for that. Also, tell them that I sent you, because that's always good. So until next week, you guys take it easy.